This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And good evening. This is Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, filling in for Tony Perkins this evening, who's on vacation, taking a break for today. I've been with you before. I'm honored and privileged to join you again. We've got a very interesting hour ahead of us. Right now, in the first segment, I'm waiting for Congressman Trent Franks to join us. He will be joining us shortly to discuss the hearings that took place this week, actually today on Capitol Hill, with regard to the Hyde Amendment and the Born Alive Protection Amendment to that Hyde Amendment. In other words, does a baby have the right to life? Does it have constitutional rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness once it's born? Unfortunately, many in our culture would argue no. Many argue that until that baby is viable, until that baby can experience pain, until that baby is wanted, various different arguments are out there. They suggest that it is not a person and it doesn't have personhood until someone else declares it so, whether it be a parent or whether it be a doctor. The actual fact of birth is irrelevant in the minds of many today, the Hermit Gosnells of the world and the other abortionists across our country. They deliver these babies. They're still alive. They have to do something with them. So they leave them to die in back rooms, on cold steel tables, in garbage bins. Or they're merciful, quote-unquote, and they'll actually snip their spines, basically surgically behead them in order to terminate them. So this is the situation we have in our culture right now. And we've got Congressman Trent Franks from Arizona, I believe, who's going to join us right now and share his perspective on all of this. Congressman, do I have you there?
Yes, Doctor, you do. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's my honor to have you, and thanks for joining us. And I stalled a little bit while they were tracking you down, so now we're going to turn this over to you. You have been involved as the chairman of the subcommittee on the Constitution and Civil Justice that put together this hearing. At least that's my understanding. And
yes,
you,
sir, I chair that committee and the subcommittee, and we did have the hearing today, and it was very compelling. Janna Jessen was an abortion survivor who testified before the committee, and her testimony was just blindingly powerful.
So was that the most compelling part of the hearing for you?
Well, I mean, I have to say yes. There were many elements of it that were significant. I would tell you that it's ironic that one of the other compelling parts of the hearing was when the opposition witness would not answer the question whether or not these little babies that survive abortion should be given emergency medical care if they're alive and kicking and, you know, these are and breathing. It just is astonishing to me that the left has to be so devoid or so divorced from just common sense and humanity that they would argue whether or not a born alive child should be protected.
How do they? It's got to be sobering. I was going to say shocking, but nothing surprises me any longer from the left, from the progressives, because they corner themselves with this moral nihilism that they embrace to the point where they can't even admit that a living, breathing human being should have the right to life. So I'm not surprised that they say this, but I am disappointed and shocked, I suppose. Yeah.
First of all, you've articulated it perfectly. That's what they've done. But I still find myself being astonished because when they come up with some different way to say it, it still just blows my mind that they would let themselves, overcome the embarrassment almost of saying that, you know, this born alive child, that it's a different circumstance somehow because the baby wasn't meant to live. The baby was meant to be aborted. But, you know, if we have
Well, it's really convenient for them to say, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Forgive me, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I think I interrupted you, sir. You go ahead.
Well, why was this hearing necessary? I think maybe that's something very important for the listeners to hear. Why are we even having to do this in Congress right
well,
now?
Well, no, that's the right question. You know, the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act passed the House overwhelmingly, like close to 75% vote. And again, I am astonished that there was any no votes on it. But the Senate has just not taken it up, and I know why. The motion to proceed to consider is a headlock on the U.S. Senate, and the Democrats in the Senate simply won't let anything of consequence be brought before the floor. And it's incumbent upon Mr. McConnell and the Republican leadership there to tell the world about it, but they don't. So consequently, you know, our base thinks that we're caving, and it's being a terribly destructive influence in the Republican Party, because people say, well, you know, you Republicans have been given the House, you've been given the Senate, and you've done nothing to counter this insanity of Barack Obama. The truth is the House has passed almost everything the base wanted to see passed, but the Senate simply doesn't take them up. And then when there's a government shutdown looming for on an appropriations bill or something, we have to essentially cave to the Democrats or see the government shut down and be, see the Republicans decimated in the November election, because we haven't articulated what's really happening. The Democrat senators have a sort of a stealth veto, and they're unaccountable for it. And it is a malicious, malignant influence right now, and it has that effect right now that's caused our party to be divided and caused the election season to be pretty confusing, pretty unusual.
So you had to have this hearing today because the Senate won't attend to the issue? Is that what you're saying?
We're hoping that the hearing will get the Senate off the dime, that Senator McConnell will say, all right, if the Republican Party doesn't stand for protecting born-alive children, it's time to board the doors up and go home.
Do you believe that that will happen? Will Senator McConnell hear this?
I think there's a chance that he will, but any calls to that end that the listeners might make would be appreciated.
Just simply, why would he not?
Even if it's a cloture vote. Well, he knows that he probably can't win a cloture vote, because right now the Democrats do not want Hillary Clinton having to take a position on this issue, because they know her position is unbelievably against this bill. And the reason they're against protecting born-alive children that have survived abortions is because they realize that that this is going to cause an awakening among the American people that, you know, if we're killing born-alive children, something's terribly wrong here. And if we're doing that, maybe some of these late-term abortions are bad, too. And
exactly.
Once we begin to ask ourselves, you know, what are we really doing here, then there's an epiphany that begins to take place in collective society.
So you're spot on, and I think that's one of the critical things that I hear in the whole debate. If it's okay to let this child die 30 seconds after birth, if that's okay, and if culture has decided that that's acceptable, then why not kill him 30 seconds before birth, 60 seconds before birth,
or
2 minutes
versa.
Before
you're
birth?
Right. See, the abortion industry has invested, I don't even have a number on the amount of money that they have invested in trying to convince the American people that the unborn child and the born child are very, very different. One is just a fetus and a blob of tissue that doesn't need to be protected. And the other, of course, is something that the Republicans don't care about. We don't care about born children, and the born children should be what our focus is. But now on this bill, they have to put born children and unborn children back together and try to convince us that neither of them are worthy of being protected. And it's just a bridge too far. Most Americans could consider themselves protectors of children. And most Americans would absolutely be nauseated at the way that the left has advanced this abortion on demand to where it's infanticide, and where we've absolutely lost our conscience in public policy, in that we have not protected these little children.
I'm going to ask you a question about Hillary Clinton's comment recently, and I'm being somewhat unfair because I'm going to ask you to read her mind, I suppose. But recently she was interviewed, and she said that the unborn person, she used that language, the unborn person, she didn't say fetus, she said person, does not have the constitutional protection of the right to life. Now, do you know, why would she have used the word person? That seems intentional
to
me.
Well, I think that sooner or later, you know, even the most recalcitrant or the most deliberately blind people stumble on the truth. They can't get around the nomenclature of reality. And so she knows that there's a person there. She knows that. but she also knows that it does not befit her political profile to admit that, because the abortion industry is, you know, would be a Fortune 500 company now in this nation, and she knows that abortion politics is huge for the left. And so, like some of her other colleagues that really know the truth in their heart, they're willing to go ahead and sacrifice these innocent children for short-term political expediency. And there's not a sadder narrative in the entire realm of politics.
You know, the President Obama has been, I believe his quote is that he will veto the Born Alive legislation, citing that it will have a chilling effect on the woman's right to choose. A chilling effect. Do you have any response to that?
Well, this man voted four times against legislation that would protect born alive children. And there's one reason why. He knows that if this country ever wakes up and realizes that we're in the center storm of the greatest human genocide in the history of humanity in what we're doing to unborn children and newborn children, that there won't be a Democrat left standing in the Northern Hemisphere if there's a final, in an election, that is, if there's ever a realization of what the Democrat Party has stood for. I mean, it's so sad because we're just not students of history, Doctor. You know, so the left gets very angry when we use the slavery parallel. But the parallel is so profoundly appropriate, because the Supreme Court said in Dred Scott that the slave was not a person, that they were chattel, and you could do whatever you want. And there were a group of people, they called them Republicans, they began to coalesce as a new party, that said, no, these slaves are children of God, and we as Americans stand for the notion that we're all created equal, and that includes slaves. And we stood up for them, and the left was so committed to it that it precipitated a bloody civil war, and we ended up shooting ourselves to doll rags. That's how committed an irrational conclusion can become when there is, you know, an investment of these kinds of political proportions in a certain narrative. And we look back and we say, how in the world could they be so blind? How could they be blind to an African-American that was enslaved by their fellow human beings and that their courts said were not human? How could we have ever let that happen? But we did. And thank God now we look back on it, and we look back on it with disgust that we could have ever done that. And I would say to you 100 years from now, when it becomes just so clear to everyone that we're killing little babies, we're going to look back and say, how could we have done that? The alternative is to not be able to look back at all, because we would have achieved such a level of depravity that nothing would matter.
Congressman, I hear the music here, but I'm going to ask you before I let you go, what do you want the listeners to do? Give us our marching
orders. I would
like
the listeners to call Mr. McConnell and ask him to hold a vote on the Born Alive bill. That's simple. Hold a vote on the Born Alive bill, even if it's a cloture vote. We need that record.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Trent Franks from Arizona, leading the charge in protecting the children of America. They do have the right to life. This is Dr. Everett Piper, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll be right back after the break.
Did you know that abortion facilities have different health standards from ambulatory surgical centers? On June 27th, in a 5-3 decision, the Supreme Court struck down several provisions of the Texas Abortion Safety Statute in Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. This basic common sense law would have required that abortion facilities be held to the same standard as ambulatory surgical centers, and that abortionists have admitting privileges at a local hospital. These regulations would have protected women from the lax practices of the abortion industry by requiring that abortion centers meet necessary health and safety standards. It is yet another sad example of the abortion distortion bias that is occurring in our nation's highest court. Despite this setback for the pro-life movement, there are many pieces of legislation currently being offered that will protect unborn children and their mothers. For questions and answers on this Supreme Court decision, and for direction on where the pro-life movement can go from here, visit frc.org/womenshealth.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at afr.net.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. Healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
This is Dr. Everett Piper again from Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Let's take care of some housekeeping details here as we set the stage for the next three segments. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. If you want to call in and have any discussion with me while I'm serving as guest host for Tony, I'd welcome that. And let's set the context for the topics for the next 45 minutes. I want to talk about abortion a little bit further. I'm going to do that right now. Then we're going to talk about the difference between Charlotte and Tulsa. Why is there a different reaction in the city of Charlotte versus the city of Tulsa with regard to these two shooting incidences that have taken place in recent days? I'd also like to talk to you about the United States Commission on Civil Rights report that came out last week that explicitly says that religious freedom, the words religious freedom, quote-unquote, are code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and that Christian supremacy in any form is intolerant. That is in the United States Civil Rights Commission report that was just released last week. I want to talk about that. And then finally, I want to talk about Sally Cohn, who is a CNN talking head, commentator on CNN, who recently at a seminar at the University of Missouri just last week said that she's happy that conservatives are being shut down and not being heard. She's delighted that academic freedom does not exist for those that have a conservative view. These are things that we need to discuss, but let's go back and revisit the abortion issue here as we conclude the congressman's comments with regard to the Born Alive Act. I'm a college president, as you know, and I was a dean of students prior to that. As a dean of students, my job was to hire student leaders. I've always worked at Christian colleges, and I worked at one somewhat north of here several years ago, not Oklahoma Wesleyan, but a different Christian institution. I was the VP for student affairs, dean of students. My job was to hire the resident assistants and the student government kids. I always made sure that I was hiring those that I thought were Christians, committed Christians, and that would support the values and the rules and the ethos and the environment at that Christian institution. In other words, lead by example. I had been pro-choice in my earlier years, and as I grew up, if you will, and got wiser, I realized the vacuous nature of the pro-choice argument. And in fact, I campaigned for a Republican once who said that she wasn't pro-abortion, but she was pro-choice because she didn't believe in legislating morality. And I used to go door-to-door and parrot that pablum, if you will. I used to say that Mary Keith Ballantyne doesn't believe in abortion. She's not pro-abortion. She's pro-choice. She just doesn't believe in legislating morality. Well, one day I woke up and realized how vacuous that argument was. It has no moral consistency. It has no logical consistency. All legislation assumes some moral standard. All laws are predicated on a moral understanding and a moral foundation. A law against speeding assumes some sort of morality, a law against theft, a law against murder. All laws exist because as a moral people, we believe that what G.K. Chesterton said to us is true, and that when you get rid of big laws, moral laws, you don't get liberty, but rather thousands and thousands of man-made little laws that rush in to fill the vacuum and you lose your freedom. Therefore, all laws are grounded in that common law, common sense, understanding of natural law, that are those laws that are endowed to us by our Creator that are self-evident. Okay, so back to my point about being a dean of students. One day, I had a young lady who I knew was politically left, and I was politically right at this time. I had realized that my argument for pro-choice was nonsense, and I had become a passionate defender of life. Jean was in my office one day. She was an RA. And I said, Jean, you're left of center. You're a Democrat. You're politically left. I'm politically right. What do you think about pro-choice, pro-life debates? She said, I'm pro-choice, woman's right to choose. I said, okay. First trimester, pro-choice? She said, absolutely, woman's right to choose. You have no business intruding on the woman's body. Great, Jean. How about second trimester? Pro-choice? Absolutely. You have no right intruding on the woman's right to govern her own body. Pro-choice. Great, Jean, you're being consistent. First trimester, second trimester, pro-choice. Now, how about third trimester? Still pro-choice. She said, absolutely, woman's right to choose. Stay out of her business, stay away from her body, let her manage her own personal affairs. I said, great, Jean, you've been logically consistent. First trimester, second trimester, third trimester. Two more questions, Jean. At the very end of the third trimester, 30 seconds before birth, pro-choice? Jean said, absolutely, woman's right to choose. I said, one last question for you. Jean, it's 30 seconds after birth. The doctor comes in and says, you just gave birth to Phil. Phil was a young man on our campus who was in a wheelchair. He was a paraplegic. He navigated the campus because he had cerebral palsy, and he navigated the campus with a joystick on his wheelchair. I said to Jean, 30 seconds after birth, the doctor comes in and says, you've given birth to Phil. Jean, woman's right to choose? And I kid you not, Jean looked at me, a good Christian girl at a Christian university, and this was 20 years ago. She looked at me and she said, yes, woman's right to choose. You see, Jean was caught in the lack of logic, the fallacies of the pro-choice argument. Because if it's okay to take that life in the first trimester, then certainly it's okay in the second trimester. And certainly, if the first two are okay, then it has to be okay in the third. And if it's okay at the beginning of the third trimester, at what point do you draw the line where it's not okay at the end of the third trimester, 30 seconds before birth? And if you're going to argue, like Hillary Clinton says, that it's okay to take that life up until the point of birth, 30 seconds before, then why isn't it okay to take it 30 seconds afterward, especially if it's Phil? And he's going to be a burden to you. You see, their argument is infanticide. It's not pro-choice. It is pro-death, and it's infanticide because they've wrested control of the definition of what it means to be a human being from God, and they've claimed to be as gods, the original sin, and that they themselves can define life. That is not our choice. God defines life. You don't. This is Dr. Everett Piper, sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll join you right after the break. We'll be right back.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like traders in the futures market of oil are a little bit concerned as we see oil start to fall a little bit as everybody is taking some gains that they've received this week on the oil futures market. The big concern is the meeting of OPEC next week, because OPEC, as they have been doing every month, is saying we're going to talk about oil output freezes. They're not freezing anything. And if they freeze oil output where it is now, it's going to be frozen at record high productions. But yet they're still looking at that. It's kind of like everybody waiting for the Fed to see if they're going to raise interest rates 2 months before the election. But nonetheless, now we're worried about oil. Very interesting. The Nikkei is dropping. That is the index in Japan. The yen is gaining strength. Remember, just yesterday, I was talking about the idea that the Bank of Japan is going to continue to manipulate and do everything they can on quantitative easing to try to create some inflation. They have made a commitment not only to keep their quantitative easing intact, but to now commit to watching and trying to keep the 10-year bond in Japan at 0%. And they're going to be working towards that in an effort to create some inflation. I talked then about this creating, again, the currency war that has been going on for a couple years, because China is going to be forced to manipulate further down in their currency. But in spite of all of that, the yen is getting stronger. Go figure. And that's got to have the Bank of Japan reeling right now.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website AFR.net.
Everett Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University here again, sitting in as host for Tony Perkins today on Washington Watch. We're going to stay on the pro-life, pro-choice issue during this segment, because I've got a few callers that want to discuss it. So I'm going to go directly to Ricky, or Ricky, from Louisiana. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
How can I help you,
Dr.
Ricky?
Piper.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just kind of appalled that all the years I've been listening to Christian radio, I've never heard a single Christian leader. Now, I just heard a discussion from you and Trent Franks, and he's one of the few that actually comes close to nailing it, or what it really is. But killing little babies. And unless you know, what you're talking about, is it's hard to win an argument or a battle or a war. You're supposed to know your enemy and what they're saying. Butchering little babies in cold blood, I mean, that's just premeditated murder in the first degree. And one of the main platforms or planks of the Democratic Party is you have to believe in massacring little babies in cold blood. I mean, how could they even talk to somebody with that rationale? In other words, for you to believe it's okay to butcher little bitty innocent, helpless babies in first-degree premeditated murder, you've got to be criminally, demonically, psychotically insane to even believe that.
Ricky, you're spot on. I'm going to comment quickly, and we'll go to another caller here. But I think one of the critical things that you've implied right now is we've got to control the definition of our words. And when we cede the definition of what it means to be human over to the opposition, we're going to lose the debate, we're going to lose the culture war, we're going to lose lives. And what we've done is we've allowed other people to dumb down the definition of what a human being is. We've allowed them to change what it means to be human. We've allowed them to call it nothing but a mass of cells. We've allowed them to call it a fetus rather than a baby. We've allowed them to call it preborn rather than born. All of these modifiers are nothing but a change of the definition of a baby. You've hit it spot on. You've hit the nail on the head. When we allow the words to be changed, the definitions of the words to be changed, we will never win the debate. And when we allow the definition of humanity to be given over to man rather than allowing it to be in God's hands where it belongs. These are very dangerous territories and very dangerous times, because if they can redefine what a baby is, they can redefine what an adult is, and they can redefine what the elderly are. They can redefine humanity in their own image rather than allowing them to rest in the fact that man is the imago Dei, the image of God. The next caller is Frankie from Kentucky, or Frank, excuse me, Frank from Kentucky.
Yeah, Brother Piper.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm, over the years, abortion has been, you hear about abortion a lot, and I called in to speak to someone on the radio one time about it. That's been maybe a couple of years ago, and I told the person I spoke to, they have a definition of calling a baby a it. Words mean a lot. And so, to me, when they call a human being a it, remember years ago they thought a black man was not a human being. Now they call a baby an it. Well, see, that's degrading to me, to call a human being an it after the person's been has been created in God's image. God never calls us its. He didn't die
right.
Its.
You're right, Frank. In fact, Wilberforce, when he was fighting slavery in Great Britain in the late 1700s, one of the strategies he used, and I'll remind you of this, and go read Amazing Grace, the book Amazing Grace, autobiography. It's not autobiography, biography of William Wilberforce, or go watch the movie. One of the strategies he used was he finally realized he needed to convince the British people of the humanity of blacks, because they were treating them as if they were subhuman. So he had a coin, an emblem developed, and on that coin, and he distributed them by the tens of the thousands, the hundreds of thousands across Great Britain, and it said simply on that coin, it had an image of a black man in chains, and it said, "Am I not a man?" In other words, he challenged the British mind, the British soul. He challenged them to recognize that they do not have the authority to dumb down the definition of a black man to subhuman. Am I not a man? And we need to do the same thing in the arguments that we were having today. Whether it be the abortion issue, of course, this is a human being. Am I not a baby? Yes, it's obvious you are. You have a heart, you have a mind, you breathe, you kick, you move. You're a human being, and you deserve the rights of the constitutional protections of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we need to do the same when it comes to the sexual debates. You can't dumb down the definition of a human being to nothing but the sum total of his or her inclinations. We are more than what we're inclined to do sexually or otherwise. We are more than our behaviors and our appetites and our passions and our proclivities. We are human beings made in the image of God. We are the imago Dei. We are not the imago dog. And we need to recognize that and defend the highest definition of what it means to be human. I've got a very quick moment that I can go to Wanda in Louisiana. I'm sorry, Wanda, I'm going to keep you on hold because the music is coming on right now, and I'm going to be rude to you if I leave you, if I bring you on. So if you want to hold until after the break, we'll talk to you afterwards. This is Dr. Everett Piper with Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins today on Washington Watch. We need to take a break, and we'll be right back in a couple minutes.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
God has appointed Christians as difference makers in our world. And by voting this election cycle, we can affect positive change for our nation. In 2012, 20 to 30 million Christians did not vote, and we've seen the results. On Election Day, we can make a difference. Voter registration deadline in most states is October 8th. Election Day is November 8th. Be sure you're registered and then vote. Be an informed voter. Visit AFAAction.net to get the AFA Action Voter Guide.
The AFA Cultural Institute, a video library of resources dealing with the discussions of our day.
Marriage and family, finances, how we know that the text of the Bible is actually what was originally written. The AFA Cultural Institute takes all of these topics and puts them in the hands of people to be able to equip them.
Start your library of the AFA Cultural Institute, now available for purchase as downloads or DVDs at afastore.net.
I can't begin to tell you how much AFR Talk has blessed my life, and it's so good to have a voice out there that is giving the Christian worldview.
Hey, y'all, this is Trucker Dave from Hammond, New York, and AFR has been a big blessing to me and many other truck drivers out here on the highways and byways of America as we roam far from home and enjoy uplifting stories, uplifting ministry, and all the programming that the AFR has to offer. So I'm happy to be a proud supporter of AFR, and I hope that all my trucking brothers and trucking sisters who know the Lord will also reach out and dig deep to support American Family Radio right now. Thank you.
Your financial gift keeps your family equipped for the culture war. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning October 18th. Listener-supported American Family Radio.
Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon on Washington Watch. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'm not as good at this as Tony is, obviously, and I'm having difficulty figuring out how to manage the cadence and the timing of the various different segments, whether or not to go to callers or whether or not to stick to my script. And I'm going to choose to err on the side of going with callers this afternoon, so forgive me if I don't get to the topics that I said I would get to earlier in the program. I have three people on the line right now waiting, and I believe the first one is Wanda from Louisiana. Wanda, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am right here.
What can
I, as I was saying, I was moved by the Lord to go turn on the radio, and so I did that. And that's just the first time I've heard about this thing. And I was saying that there is not a word to describe this, that evil. That's not a word that, well, it just, that doesn't describe it. It's beyond imagination. It's beyond understanding. It's heinous. It's everything evil that's ever occurred under the sun. And something has to be done to put a stop to it. If the bill passes, then Mr. I'm going to just call it Blama, would veto it. Now, how would that be stopped?
Well, his veto would have to be overridden by a vote of the Senate, which, if you put pressure on your representatives, on the people you've elected, then indeed your voice will be heard. And I think what I'd like to do, Wanda, is affirm you in this. It is evil. And there's so many things going on in our culture right now that are evil that we either don't care about or don't know about. Well, we can solve the problem of not knowing about it by doing our homework, doing our reading, paying attention to the news, and actually working a little bit harder to stay informed. And those that are listening right now probably do a pretty good job of that because you follow Family Research Council and you follow the news and you pay attention to the issues that are in play. But I'm so shocked that people don't know what's going on in culture right now. They don't realize that babies are being left to die after they're born. They're being left to die on metal, steel, cold metal tables. They're being put in garbage bins. They're being wrapped in cloth and dumped while they're still alive. That is happening right now. The story of Kermit Gosnell is a story you all need to follow. And if you need to learn more about it, then go to the Family Research Council website, and they've got all sorts of information there that shares the testimony that was just delivered at this special commission, this congressional hearing. You need to read it word for word and see what's going on out there and then take action. You are responsible. You're the voters. You're responsible for doing something. Take action. Like Bonhoeffer told us, not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act. Silence in the face of evil is evil itself, to use Wanda's words and Bonhoeffer's words. I'm going to repeat Bonhoeffer, and then I'm going to go to Jim in Iowa. Not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act. Silence in the face of evil is evil itself. You all are responsible to speak, to act, and to stop being silent. You have the power. Jim in Iowa, can I help you?
Dr. Piper, good afternoon. It's an honor to speak with you. I would like to first agree with you 100%. I concur with all your previous callers and your guests that this is just atrocious. And I think the one thing that really scares me the most is how can Hillary Clinton stand there and hold her new grandbaby and not think about what's going on? Because she has to know. It's inconceivable to me.
The only thing I can think, Jim, is you go to Romans. You go to the book of Romans, and we know that the truth of God is written on every human heart. But we also know that when we exchange the truth of God for a lie and we start worshiping the created rather than the creator, what happens? We are given over to a reprobate mind. And that is so true of culture today. That's so true of the academy, the university, the colleges, the Congress, our kids, our culture, our communities, our corporations. We've exchanged the truth of God for a lie. We've started worshiping the created rather than the creator. We worship ourselves. We're narcissists. We believe that we are as God. We commit the original sin over and over again. And there are consequences. God tells us what those consequences are as individuals and as a culture and as a community. We are given over to a reprobate mind. We cannot even think our way out of a paper bag any longer. We can't think of what's good and what's evil and what's right and what's wrong and what's up and what's down. My land, we can't even acknowledge what a male and a female is any longer. We're so confused. We've been given over to a reprobate mind. I think I have time to take David's call very quickly. David from Mississippi. Quickly, David.
Hey, Dr. Piper. Thanks for taking my call. And just real quick, you are doing a fine job filling in for Tony. So,
Well, you call him and tell him that, okay?
I will do that. It's actually pretty neat that I'm piggybacking off this previous caller because I'm staunchly pro-life, my daughter had a baby about 3 weeks ago. He was born a month early. Praise the Lord. He's healthy and he's strong, but he's really little. And, you know, I'm there at the hospital the day he's born, and he's so small I could hold him in one hand. And it's been a while since I'd seen a baby that small. But, again, I'm staunchly pro-life, and just sitting there at the hospital with him when he was like 5 hours old, it hit me like a ton of bricks. This baby was no less alive yesterday when he was in his mother's womb than he is today when he's born, you know, or the day before that, or a week before that, or a month before that. And the left would have us believe that it's just like a blob of tissue, and then all of a sudden, you know, it exits its mother's body, and all of a sudden it's a human being. And, I mean, you just said it right. You know, you have to be able to reprobate mind to believe that kind of thing. And I mean, that's really all I have to say, but it just, you know, I don't know how anybody can look at a little baby and think that this was not alive just a few days prior to being born.
David, the only way I know that a human being can look at another human being and declare them to be subhuman is narcissism, self-absorption, and arrogance. You go back to the original sin. We are told that God told Adam and Eve that they can do anything they want, eat of any tree that they wanted, except for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, why? Why did God tell us not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? You would think that God would want us to know what's good and what's evil and tell us, go eat that fruit so you will know. Well, I think the answer to that question is found actually in the words of Satan, because he comes along and he tempts Eve, and he says, well, did God really tell you not to eat? Well, surely he didn't. But if he did, this is the Piper paraphrase, if he did, he told you not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because he knows that when you do, you will become as God. You will know what's good and evil. You will know. You will define everything. You don't need God any longer to tell you what's right or wrong, up or down, male or female, life or death. You are as God, and you can define everything. And isn't that where we are as a culture right now? Our entire culture is committing the original sin, and we are eating at the apple with a evil grin on our face as the juice drips down our chin. It is just grotesque. This is where we are as a culture. And again, you as Christians, you as leaders, need to take the responsibility to enlighten your representatives and hold them accountable, and to teach and to write and to speak accordingly in a culture that's desperate for your truth. It's a dry sponge begging for you to do so. I'm going to shift gears here to last two stories. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights report that explicitly says the religious freedom, and I'm quoting right now, are code words. Religious freedom are code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and Christian supremacy or any form of intolerance. This is what the Civil Rights Commission just said in its recent report. And I want you to hear me on this. This is a crystal clear warning of the government's full intent to silence any who disagree with its moral nihilism and its arrogance. This is its full intent. They are announcing their full intent to criminalize any boundaries for sexual behavior and sexual expression. In fact, the very term sexual morality will become meaningless, if not criminal, under this new government report and its corresponding regulations. Any dissent grounded in a Christian conviction will be labeled bigotry, and it will be punished. There isn't much time. There isn't much time left where you can speak without great loss and great consequence, and you need to do so now. You need to call your congressman, call your senator, and write to both of them. You need to call radio stations. You need to write in the newspaper. You need to be loud. You need to speak. And in November, remember that any vote for Hillary Clinton or her party is a vote that guarantees the loss of religious liberty, not only for you, but for your kids and your grandkids. The progressives are very clear right now as to their intent. See the laws in Iowa and Massachusetts and California, where in Iowa it is now a criminal act for you to not accommodate transgender pronouns and transgender wishes within the walls of the church if the church provides any quote-unquote public programs. Well, excuse me, I'm a Christian. It's my understanding that Christianity is open to all the public, and the church is a church that invites the public to come in to the church. So how in the world can I define between a public and a private function within the church? These people don't even understand what the church is. And by the way, if you've got a basketball program, a church league, that's public, isn't it? Do you now have to provide transgender showers to the athletes that are participating in that program? Massachusetts has the same law on the books. California just passed a law that made it illegal for counselors to give counsel to any minors that want to stop engaging in homosexual sex. You can no longer provide that counsel. The list goes on and on. And this U.S. Commission on Civil Rights report is explicitly clear, saying that your religious freedom that is guaranteed to you in the First Amendment is nothing but a code word, code words for discrimination and intolerance and racism and sexism and homophobia and Islamophobia, and it's Christian supremacy, and it's just blatant intolerance. Now, intolerance. Okay, I'm going to take a little liberty here in the last few minutes. I am going to share with you an op-ed that I just wrote this morning, and it'll probably be appearing this weekend in Breitbart, I understand. Okay, I've got a couple minutes, and I'm going to read this to you. Okay, it's called The Tolerance and Tyranny of Ms. Khan. At a free speech symposium recently held at the University of Missouri, CNN commentator Sally Khan argued that pro-free speech advocates are merely trying to stifle diversity on our respective college campuses. If they feel they can no longer speak their views, good, said Khan. I'm happy they feel under assault, she concluded. And thus Ms. Khan proves what too few have been willing to see and even fewer have been willing to say. Progressive tolerance is really nothing more than a ploy being used by soldiers of hope and change in their quest for unmitigated control of our culture. And when the balance of power shifts, tolerance will quickly turn to tyranny. These are the leaders of the left. They are the politicians, the professors, and the pundits who really believe they are the ones we've been waiting for and they are the change we seek. They have total confidence, some might suggest arrogance, that they are right, even though up until just yesterday they were quick to condemn everyone else for thinking they were right. They see no need to hide behind pretensions of tolerance any longer, for that would mean that some ideas other than their own might actually have some merit. They have no need to pretend any longer. They are very open now as to their true agenda, and here it is. They will squash dissent from any who risk pointing out their contradictions. They will sequester and even sentence any who dare ask why their emperor is wearing no clothes. This is not intellectual freedom, but rather ideological fascism. Disagree and be silenced. Refuse to join the parade of goose-stepping clones and be fined or jailed. Challenge their orthodoxy and lose your job, your business, your retirement, your church, your college, and your home. They never had any intention of tolerating anyone or anything. Their goal was always power. And now that they have it, they clearly intend to use it as a bludgeon against all who challenge their duplicity. The worldview driving all of this is based on lies. It is a magician's trick, an illusion designed to conceal and deceive. Nothing is what it seems. Their call for inclusion is driven by exclusion. Their criticism of hate is fueled by their own hate. They wave the banner of feminism while denying the female. They claim to be pro-science while shamelessly ignoring basic biology. They revel in bigotry as they condemn the bigot. They kill the powerless while they rail against the powerful. They denounce racism while fomenting racial division. Waving banners of love, they know nothing but sex. Championing human rights, they mock what is human and what is right. Preaching that all morality is relative, they demand that they alone are moral. They appoint judges to condemn those who judge. They call for democracy while working to overrule the democratic vote. They claim to be multicultural while demeaning other cultures. They champion tolerance while they celebrate tyranny. History shows us that the only solution to such madness is found in the age-old words once emblazoned on many a college seal. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Words that Ms. Khan seems to eschew. Truth gives us freedom. Lies always lead to bondage and slavery. And C.S. Lewis told us, no culture can do any measuring without a measuring rod outside of those things being measured. The freedom Mrs. Khan, or Ms. Khan, enjoys to say what she says assumes such a measuring rod as the judge of her claims. And the freedom I enjoy to challenge her assumes the same. And without this outside authority to referee the debate, her opinion wins and my freedom is lost. And so is yours. But apparently, Ms. Khan is just fine with that and considers that to be good education. Sad. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, honored to fill in for Tony Perkins, and I'm going to do so a couple times next week, too, unless he fires me as a result of this program. It was a joy to join you this afternoon. We'll talk to you again Monday, and then perhaps again Friday. Blessings to y'all. Have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.